This is Mark Roosevelt. I'm the president of Antioch College, and I write a monthly column for the Antioch Independent called Roosevelt's Read. Writing that breaks new ground often has trouble reaching a large readership, but momentum builds as these works find advocates. For the past few years, the hottest such books have been Edward St. Aubyn's spectacularly maudlin novels about the hideous parenting and drug-addled youth of British aristocrat Patrick Melrose. As I write today, St. Aubyn is being supplanted by the similarly autobiographical but remarkably unhistrionic Norwegian author Carl Ove Knausgård, two volumes of whose semi-fictional magnum opus have been published in America as My Struggle. In the early 1990s, if you were asked in an urgent tone, "Are you reading them?" it was very likely that the "them" referred to the novels of Patrick O'Brien. The story of O'Brien's novels' emergence as literary favorites is almost as spectacular as the novels themselves. Originally published in the United States by Lippincott, poor sales caused the publisher to drop the series after only the third installment. The novels continued to be published in Great Britain, receiving modest attention and commercial success. Authors of historical fiction often struggle to find an audience, and despite his mastery of the form, O'Brien was no exception. Finally, in 1990, Norden returned O'Brien to print in America, publishing the 12th installment, The Letter of Mark, in hardback, and its predecessors in a uniform paperback edition. By this time, a small coterie of loyal and influential readers had become aggressive proselytizers, but in retrospect, O'Brien's eventual success seems inevitable. But a jolt of some kind was required. That jolt was provided by Richard Snow, editor of American Heritage, whose January 1991 front-page article in the New York Times Book Review was entitled, "An Author I'd Walk the Plank For." Snow seemed to realize he had just one chance to make his case, and he pulled no punches, calling O'Brien's series, quote, "the best historical novels ever written." He concluded, "On every page, O'Brien reminds us with subtle artistry of the most important of all historical lessons, that times change, but people don't, that the griefs and follies and victories of the men and women who were here before us are, in fact, the maps of our own lives." Snow's essay inspired me to read the first novel, Master and Commander, and I was hooked. I read the next 11 already published volumes in less than a year, and then eagerly awaited the arrival of each new installment. The 20-volume series has given me as much pleasure as any books I have ever read. O'Brien's books revolve around the exploits of the British Navy during the Napoleonic Wars, the same terrain as C.S. Forrester's Horatio Hornblower novels, which are intended for younger readers. The action, as many early reviewers pointed out in a critical way, is pretty limited. It's not at all the main draw. The novels are about character and how character interacts with society and culture. In this case, mostly the character of the ship's captain, Jack Aubrey, and physician, Stephen Maturin, and how they relate to each other and their compatriots in the petri dish-like world of a British frigate, the Surprise. Aubrey is a creative sailor, combatant, and leader much more assured at sea than on land. Maturin is a doctor, a spy, and a leading naturalist who searches for new species of bird and beetle as the Surprise pursues the French to all corners of the globe. And there's something else. An excited embrace of life's possibilities, as exhibited by adventuresome and curious folk in the early 19th century, barely 200 years ago, but worlds away from how we live today. This change in zeitgeist is described well by Anthony Lane when he reviewed the 2003 film Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, which is comprised of events in several of the O'Brien novels. Lane writes, quote, "What the novels leave us with, and what emerges more fitfully from this film, as if in shafts of sunlight, is the growing realization that, although our existence is indisputably safer, softer, cleaner and more dependable than the lives of Captain Aubrey and his men, theirs were in some immeasurable ways better. Richer in possibility and more entrancing to the eye and the spirit alike. As Stephen said of the Iliad, this book is full of death, but oh so living. Just so. If you died on board the Surprise, it would not be for want of having lived. Who was the man who created these spectacular books? Perhaps above all, he was hardworking, publishing many other novels, stories, biographies, and translations, in addition to the Napoleonic War series. And he was an indefatigable researcher, steeped in early 19th century life on the sea and on land, a particular expert in the arcane details of scientific explorations and naval battles. He was also an intensely private man, who countenanced few personal questions from interviewers, a bit of a recluse. He's made his home in a small Catalan port in southern France. He was also a fibber. O'Brien manufactured critical parts of his biography. He said that he was born and raised in Ireland, but he was born Richard Patrick Rus to middle-class parents in England. He changed his name by deed poll from Rus to O'Brien in 1945 at the time of his second marriage. For most of his life, he failed to acknowledge his siblings, as well as his first marriage and two children. Whether these personal limitations should matter to us is a subject for legitimate debate. It's sufficient here to note that O'Brien's misstatement of fact went unquestioned, for the most part, until Dean King, the author of several books about the novels, started delving into the historical record, eventually publishing a biography of O'Brien in 2000, a few months after O'Brien's death at 86. This biography is inspiring. O'Brien kept plugging away. He believed in his work and withstood years of disappointment until well past 70 years of age. He received the accolades and financial rewards that his hard work and talent should have afforded him long before. But O'Brien's story is also sad. He so isolated himself from many relationships with his siblings and his own son that his life feels more of a retreat than his admirers might have hoped. An artist such as O'Brien leaves readers the legacy of his books, not his flawed personal conduct. So as time and age have dimmed memory, I will soon return to his novels. Once again, I will be grateful for this wonderful gift of a fully drawn portrait of a world very different from our own, people by characters it would have been good to know, and graced with vivid accounts of explorations that take me back to the time not that long ago, when our kind was still cataloging the discovery of unknown species. For a few happy months, at least, these 20 volumes will distract me from the knowledge that just 200 years later, our energies are devoted to documenting the extinction of many of those same species, doomed by human activity, with its origins in an industrial age, which at the time of Aubrey and Maturin was visible on the horizon, but was still far less menacing than the outlines of an approaching French man of war, under sail, preparing for action. I'm Mark Roosevelt, president of Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. For more information about our liberal arts curriculum, where students discover not only good books to read, but also new and better ways of living in the world, go to antiochcollege.org. Thanks.